From WBUR Boston, I'm Mike Peskin for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 10 days ago, President Obama worked out a compromise over the requirement that Catholic-affiliated institutions provide birth control to their employees. They say a compromise is an agreement that leaves neither side happy. But one side seemed much less happy than the other. Catholic bishops and other faith-based institutions objected. This was framed as a First Amendment issue and a moral issue, and now morals are to be the guide. There are new bills before each House of Congress that would allow any employer to deny health care that is considered morally objectionable. But what exactly does that mean and what could it mean? This hour, On Point, employers, morals, your insurance. And you can join this conversation. Is it a slippery slope? Should moral really be a new policy? You can also comment on our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Thursday, Nebraska Republican Congressman Jeff Fortenberry spoke to the House of Representatives about how he believes conscience rights are threatened by the Obama administration.
Right now, these institutions, as well as other people of goodwill, are being asked to choose. Follow your deeply held reasoned beliefs or obey President Obama and Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius' new mandate in violation of your conscience rights. That's a false choice. That's un-American.
That argument is the foundation of the bills we'll be discussing, and we'll hear this hour from Slate's Amanda Marcotte and Anna Franzanello with the Americans United for Life. They've been thinking on this, and we'll also talk to top bioethicist Arthur Kaplan. We'll get his take. But first in Washington is Noam Levy, healthcare policy reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He's been watching these bills closely in Congress. Noam Levy, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks so much.
Describe the bills for me.
Well, so as you mentioned, there's a bill in the House. There's another one in the Senate by Senator Roy Blunt from Missouri. And the bills essentially enter into the fray over the mandate in the health care law that requires that health plans provide preventive services, particularly for women. So as you mentioned in the lead-in, there's been a lot of blowback from Republicans and conservatives that this violates the conscience of certain health plans, certain employers. What this law would do was essentially exempt health plans from providing coverage for any service, any medical service, that they deem morally objectionable.
Mm-hmm. As they define it. I mean, that's what my mind goes to. I'm sure that's what many listeners' minds will go to. Moral doesn't seem to have a firm basis.
Yeah. In the statute, and that sort of fits into a broader kind of debate that's been going on for many years about how specifically the federal government can stipulate what services health plans, or for that matter, hospitals, doctors, nurses, ambulances, can decline to provide because it violates their morals. Now, much more quietly, the Obama administration, when it first came into office, had to tackle this in the context of a rule called the conscience rule that the Bush administration put into place that did offer broad exemptions to medical providers for providing services that they found that violated their conscience. And that was interpreted by some to mean not only not providing, say, abortions or sterilizations, but even more broadly allowing a doctor or a nurse to not care for a gay man with AIDS, to not perform in vitro fertilization for someone who's a lesbian. So the Obama administration stepped into that and said, hold on a second, we are ready to recognize an exemption for certain medical services, in this case abortions and sterilizations, but we don't want a rule that is so broad that it allows medical practitioners to pick and choose what they will and won't provide.
Right, and that's related, but what doctors or nurses won't do isn't exactly what's in these bills. It's what health insurers and companies that provide health insurance will provide, right?
That's right, but presumably a health plan or an employer could make the same calculation.
Right.
We don't want to cover, say, treatment for AIDS.
And would it work that it would be procedures that are crossed off, or could it actually work that certain individuals in some cases wouldn't be able to get treatment, in other cases would. I'm thinking of an example where a lung cancer treatment for a non-smoker, an employer might say, well, that's fine. But a lung cancer treatment for a smoker, the employer might say, well, he has a moral objection to providing that treatment. How would that work?
I don't think that's exactly clear, actually. The language here is so broad that it presumably would allow health plans to make decisions on any number of treatments. Now, but it's important to remember that this fits into the broader context of the requirement in the law that every state will come up with a list of sort of required coverage. That's in the law. So it would still be true that health plans would have to sort of cover hospitalizations, for example. But perhaps a health plan could decide, as you suggest, that a certain kind of treatment for one reason or another is morally objectionable.
Now, this idea to allow healthcare providers, companies, a moral opt-out, was this one of those ideas that was floating around for a while? You know, we don't always hear about every bill that's introduced. I mean, every session someone introduces an anti-flag-burning amendment and someone introduces a bill to eliminate the penny. So was this one of those ideas that's always out there and just never got much traction, or was this just recently conjured up in reaction to the Catholic Compromise?
Well, I mean, as I indicated earlier, this piece of legislation really stems from this debate over the conscience rule that had to do more specifically with what medical providers will do. The iteration here is that it deals with health plans because that's a new sort of level of federal oversight that results from the Affordable Care Act that the president signed 2 years ago.
And what's to prevent this bill from being essentially a get-out-of-paying-for-health insurance card? Hey, I had a moral objection. That expensive procedure, I'm not going to pay for it.
I suppose that could be the subject of debate. I mean, the conscience rule, which I was discussing earlier, has been the subject of quite extensive litigation in numerous states. In fact, the Obama administration moved in 2010 to roll back the rule for medical providers because there was such so much debate in the courts, so much lack of clarity. I should say that Senator Blunt, who's sponsoring the Senate version of this, has claimed that you know his intention is not to exclude any and every medical procedure from coverage, and that this is more, he wants this to be more narrowly tailored for something that really deals with a religious or a moral or a conscience issue. But, as you indicated, it is quite broad.
Well, let's hear Missouri Republican Senator Roy Blunt making his case.
It's not about any one procedure or any one religion. It's about the long ingrained American concept that you can't force religious institutions are people of faith to do things that are clearly against their long-held faith beliefs.
Noam Levy, have you heard arguments that weren't religious? I mean, this is not a religious conscience bill. It's not written that way. It's a morally conscience bill. So what non-religious arguments are being put forth as to what
I
could be
accepted? That's not to say that there haven't been, right. But I mean, I think that the backdrop to this is clearly religious. The major players in the debate over the Obama administration's requirement that preventive services be covered for women were the Catholic bishops, the Catholic hospitals, Catholic charities. This has clearly sort of been a religious debate more than anything else, I think.
Noam Levy reports on healthcare policy for the Los Angeles Times. Thanks very much, Noam.
Thank you.
And joining me in Washington is Anna Franzanello, staff counsel and former legal fellow with the Americans United for Life. Anna, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Mike.
Tell me why you support this bill, these bills, I should say.
Yeah, well, I was listening to your exchange just a minute ago, and I want to just push back a little bit because Senator Blunt's amendment or bill, along with Representative Fortenberry's bill, all that they do is they afford Americans the same rights that we had before the Affordable Care Act was passed into law. And that right is to negotiate a plan with a health insurance company that meets our needs and our conscience, fits with our conscience. So that it doesn't do anything, first of all, to force any health insurance company to offer a plan along those lines. But what it does is it ensures that the same rights exist now that did before the Affordable Care Act passed to negotiate a health insurance plan in accord with your conscience.
Under the Bush provisions, the conscience provisions, was there so broadly written essentially a morals opt-out clause for any health care? Or wasn't it, I shouldn't say wasn't it, was it more narrowly tailored for specific procedures?
Well, before the Affordable Care Act, we didn't have requirements coming from the federal government on health insurance plans. So you can't really compare the Bush regulations, which were meant to deal with another type of discrimination and coercion problem, with what we see coming from the Obama administration right now, a mandate that would force religious institutions, or even, you know, you're talking a minute ago about moral objections. Americans United for Life, where I work, is not a religiously affiliated organization, and yet we do have an institutional conscience that would oppose a drug like Ella, which is an abortion-inducing drug that has been mandated now by the federal government to be included in all insurance plans. So just only protecting religious-based objections doesn't protect Americans United for Life's conscience, which is equally violated. You know, we have a pro-life conscience that we would be being forced to subsidize a drug that we, you know, our very existence is to oppose these kind of life-ending drugs and devices and not have them being pushed. So we'd be being forced against our conscience.
Right.
That's where we've been talking about, well, what's a moral objection?
I get that, and we're going to pursue it more in just a moment. Stay with me, Anna Franzanello. I'm Mike Pesca, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Mike Pesca, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking here today about your employer's moral convictions and your health care coverage. We're speaking with Anna Franzanello, who joins us from Washington. She's a staff counsel for Americans United for Life. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Slate blogger Amanda Marcotte. But first, Anna, I wanted to ask you one question. You just detailed how your organization was not specifically religiously affiliated, and therefore the guiding principle needn't be religion, but morals. But the question was, how narrow or how wide would this are the implications of this bill? No matter what you assert how the bill would be used, what's to stop, as the bill or the amendment in the case of the Senate, as it's written, what's to stop an employer from essentially claiming morality as an out for just denying whatever health care coverage they want to deny?
Well, again, you have to negotiate with your insurance plan. So this bill doesn't do anything beyond preserve the freedom of conscience that has existed and the right for employers to negotiate with their health insurance plan those benefits that would be covered as well. So there hasn't been this catastrophic doomsday scenario that everybody is painting now. Oh, if you protect the rights of conscience, then you're going to have all, you know, X, Y, Z happen. We've been preserving the rights of conscience and the ability for employers to negotiate with their insurers, and we don't see these catastrophic problems. So it's really a red herring to say that a bill that's preserving the freedom of conscience that has always existed is going to lead to this myriad of problems that we don't have now.
All right. Well, joining us, as I mentioned, is Amanda Marcotte. She's a blogger for Slate's The X Factor. She writes all about women's issues. Her latest book is Get Opinionated. Amanda Marcotte, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
So, Amanda, you've heard the conversation thus far and you know about these bills. What's your take?
Well, I do find it extremely ironic that an anti-abortion person would come on here and object to contraception being made available to women, which, you know, it's known that contraception is an extremely good way to prevent abortion. So it makes one wonder if this is really about saving fetal life or is about controlling female sexuality. I would also add that the notion that we're somehow restoring a right to conscience that existed before is simply incorrect. 28 states have already mandated that employers cover contraception services for their employees, and that includes Catholic hospitals and universities, and there was no doomsday scenario. The hospitals and universities complied, and nothing has gone wrong. Nobody's conscience is violated. The world has kept on going, and women are better protected against unintended pregnancy and therefore abortion. It seems to me that anybody who is opposed to abortion should be the first to sign on mandated free contraception for anybody who wants it, you know, just because that is a known way to prevent abortion.
Yeah, but a Catholic wouldn't subscribe to that, a Catholic who follows the dictates of the church.
Yes, but Anna said that this was about life and not about religion, and so I have to point that out. I mean, I definitely agree, and I think one of the problems is once you start to think about using health insurance as a way to manipulate, bully, and pressure women about their sexual choices, is it just going to stop at contraception and abortion? I mean, back in the 60s and 70s, you would also have conscience clauses on insurance, which, again, the notion that there's been free conscience prior to the Affordable Health Care Act is wrong, because there have been laws passed forcing insurance companies to not do what they used to do, which was withhold maternal care from women who were single when they got pregnant.
So Anna Franzinello, Amanda there is saying that the ones getting bullied are possibly the women. You're kind of framing it that the ones getting bullied are insurance providers, perhaps being bullied into providing services that go against their conscience. Is this just people talking past each other?
Well, there are several things that Amanda said that are deceiving, if not false. And one I'd just like to point out, I am a woman, so I find it ironic that, you know, all these statements being spit at me are about kind of anti-woman statements, but I am a woman.
I knew that, yes.
And when you talk about the state...
Well, women could be against women's rights. I mean, there's no...
Sorry, Amanda, just let Anna go ahead.
When you talk about these so-called contraceptive equity laws in the states, there always are ways for plans that don't want to be coerced, or employers that don't want to be coerced into offering that type of insurance, to have an out, which we don't have with the Affordable Care Act. There, without paying a penalty, there is not an out for these employers. Whereas in the states, you can either, most of these mandates apply to prescription coverage only, so that you would be able to either make that tough choice of not offering prescription coverage, or self-insure your prescription coverage, or even insure your plan under, you know, ERISA, which is there are ways that the states have allowed. Plus, many states also have much broader conscience exemptions, but even the ones that mirror, supposedly mirror the Obama administration's proposed conscience exemption, all have other ways that you would not be forced to violate your conscience. And granted, they're tough decisions of either, you know, self-insuring your prescription coverage or not offering prescription coverage. But so the comparison to the states is a very deceptive one to use, first of all. You're talking about, is this women versus Catholics or whatever? Mm-hmm. I don't see my gender and my faith as necessarily in opposition to this mandate. But again, when we're talking about calling it a contraceptive mandate, we have to keep in mind that we're talking about a mandate that applies to all FDA-approved contraceptives, which includes a new drug, Ella, which was approved after the Affordable Care Act came into existence, became law. So Ella is a drug that's a close analog to RU486, and it can, you know, by the FDA's own admission, affect, not just prevent implantation, but it can affect implantation. And there are studies that show that this is an abortion-inducing drug. So we're not just talking about condoms here. We're not just talking about things that can prevent conception, but we're talking about drugs, even Plan B, which can prevent implantation, which for a lot of people is a serious and legitimate concern about having a life-ending effect. Whether or not you want to consider pregnancy to begin an implantation or not, there are a number of Americans that feel that that is a life-ending mechanism of action and have a legitimate and serious moral objection to it.
So, Amanda, what consideration should be given so that you, if you're a Catholic a diocese that employs people, they don't want to provide a drug that does this, they don't want to provide abortion or contraception, should any accommodation be made?
To be very, very, very clear, abortion is not covered by this preventive health care measure. Even drugs that can be taken after ejaculation do not, in fact, induce abortion. There is only one abortion drug approved by the FDA. That's RU486. There's only one drug on the market that terminates a pregnancy. Ella, Plan B, the birth control pill, other drugs that are claimed to be abortion drugs by the anti-choice movement are not. They do not terminate pregnancies. They prevent them. Now, if you have some kind of fear that because you can't see what's going on that it's somehow possibly abortive, you are free under the Obama plan to not take the birth control pill, to not take Ella, not take any drug that for some reason your church or whoever has told you is against your faith. The question here is whether or not individual women are allowed the right to conscience without being bullied or coerced or having their choice influenced by whether or not they can pay. And I genuinely feel that your employer does not own you. Your employer should not control how you use your legally mandated compensation for working. We're not talking about benefits here that are being offered just as gifts to the employees. These are benefits that employees work for. If an employer can tell you how you spend the health insurance that they provide as a benefit and compensation for work that you do for them, what next? Are we going to start saying that employers should have control over the salary?
Right. So the analogy would be...
salary is also compensation for the work that you do.
And if you could take your money... I understand. If you could take your money and go buy a condom, is you're making that analogy. How different is that than if you take your employer-provided health care and use it for contraception? How different is it than taking the dollar in your pocket and buying a condom? Let us now go to a couple calls. Let's take Susan from Medford, Massachusetts first. Susan, you're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Well, first of all, I want to say I think this bill that's before Congress is absolutely horrifying. And I think that, in terms of opposing President Obama's proposals on contraception, it's been framed in terms of women's health, which is certainly an important issue. But it's also a freedom of religion question in that some people are trying to oppose their religious beliefs on patients and employees who have their health care plans. And this is totally against our Constitution and against our Founding Fathers. So in the name of religious belief, it's completely wrong for the Catholic Church or anybody else to impose their particular values and morals on somebody else. I happen to be a Unitarian Universalist, and we, for example, support gay marriage. And I find it fascinating that these same people who are talking about government interference with the individual morals of the church want to pass laws making gay marriage illegal. They want the government to do that, which is opposed to my personal my personal religious belief. I want to add one more thing, and this is actually quite serious, to show how far this can go. I had a friend many years ago who was a Protestant who happened to be pregnant, and she was in a Catholic hospital in Boston. I won't mention the name because there was a huge settlement later. Mm-hmm. She had cervical cancer, and the hospital did not tell her that she had it because the medical indications when you have cervical cancer and are pregnant are to terminate the pregnancy. Now, cervical cancer is generally not fatal. However, they never told her that she had cervical cancer, and they allowed it to proceed so that she would not have an abortion, and she died, okay? Let's speak about the right to life here. She died in that hospital, leaving her baby was born. She had another child, two children without a mother. So this is the extreme. There was a settlement made for a lot of money to her children in the end of this whole nightmare. But it shows what happens in an extreme when some people impose their religious beliefs on others, and it can actually result in death.
All right. Thank you, Susan, for the call. Let me put a couple of those concepts to our guest. Anna Franzanello, there you're hearing Susan and Amanda both talking about the insured. What about the liberties of the insured not to have a religion imposed upon them? The people behind this bill, or in the case of Senator Blunt, this amendment talks about the religious liberties of the insurers or the employers. Why is the religious liberties of the insurers or employers take precedence?
Well, there's nothing in this bill that would prevent a woman from still accessing contraception and paying for it and using it. It's a red herring to say that somehow this is taking away contraception from women or these rights from women, because you still have that right. You can still, it's not actually telling you that you can't use contraception. Or any of these drugs, even Ella, which is an abortion-inducing drug, you can still use that and purchase it yourself. There's nothing in this. What we have with the Affordable Care Act now is and the mandate coming through the Obama administration's implementation of the preventive services provision is that we have a requirement from the federal government without, as we have in the states, a way for employers not to be forced to participate in. But we have a new requirement on employers that they are forced to pay into insurance plans that cover things that they may have a moral or religious-based objection to. What we have now is the change, the new thing that we have is a mandate from the government that forces participation in by payment of these religious employers. And that's why we're talking about it, because we now have a mandate forcing employers to do so.
Let's go now to Jerry from Cookeville, Tennessee. Jerry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Amanda. Hi, Anna. The whole deal is turning this around about contraception. It started the week before when the president and the Health and Human Services Secretary, when they were mandating the Catholic Church and Catholic organizations that was, you know, that part of the Constitution that says, nor prohibit the free exercise thereof. It seems a lot of people forget about that. In effect, when the president spoke in Cairo in 2009, where he said people in every country should be free to choose and live their faith based upon the persuasion of the mind, the heart, and soul. So I guess he's forgot about it here in this country, but in Cairo, he seemed to remember it. It seems that a lot of this would be 170 years ago. I mean, no offense to you, Amanda, but you would have probably been a speaker with Bruno Bauer at the Doctors Club in Berlin. I just find it appalling to try to make this sound like they don't want health care for women. That is totally false.
I think you lost me a little bit on the point there, but are you saying that, what exactly are you saying, that the insurer should be allowed to follow their conscience and, Jerry?
Well, yes. I'm talking about the First Amendment to the Constitution, you know, where it says,
yes,
prohibit the free exercise thereof.
Right.
I mean, if somebody's violating somebody's religious rights, the whole deal with the deal last week with the president and the Health and Human Services Secretary Sebelius, it was forcing Catholic charities,
okay,
and Catholic institutions to pay for contraceptions, sterilizations, and abortions.
Okay, I got it. I want to ask it to Amanda this way. Amanda, could you answer Jerry on his basis? You know, in other words, why isn't this forcing someone to violate their religious rights? So the answer isn't, okay, the other rights are more important, is just answering why isn't this forcing someone to abandon their rights?
For a very good reason. Number one, the Catholic Church was always exempt. Second of all, Catholic hospitals and universities, which serve the public and take federal dollars, have been allowed to exempt themselves as long, and the insurance companies are going to step in and cover women's contraception directly. So nobody, no Catholic church, no Catholic hospital, no Catholic university is being forced to cover women's contraception. What the complaint of the Blunt Amendment right now is that if any employer deems any service against their morals, they should be able to step in and force the insurance company not to cover it, even if they're doing it directly to the employee and not going through the employer. So that's, I fail to see how religious freedom gives you the right to step in and tell an insurance company that they can't cover somebody because they're your employee. That seems like not protecting the religious freedom of employers, but in fact using religion as a bludgeon to take away the religious freedom of women to go to be treated equally and fairly no matter what their belief is. I mean, at this point, what we're basically saying is if you are a non-Catholic, or like 98% of Catholic women, you are a Catholic who chooses to use contraception, you are being told that you have to pay extra because your employer disapproves of your so-called lifestyle.
Amanda Marcotte, blogger for Slate and the Double X Factor. Her latest book is Get Opinionated. Amanda Marcotte, thank you so much for being here. I'm Mike Pesca, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Mike Pesca, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about ethics and how they could affect your health coverage. With me is Anna Franzanello from Americans United for Life. Anna, thank you for being here. In a moment, we'll also hear from bioethicist Arthur Kaplan. But first, on Saturday, speaking to the Ohio Christian Alliance in Columbus, Rick Santorum said he sees consequences in the near future for President Obama's health care mandates.
One of the things that you don't know about Obamacare and one of the mandates is they require free prenatal testing in every insurance policy in America. Why? Because it saves money in health care. Why? Because free prenatal testing ends up in more abortions and therefore less care that has to be done, because we cull the ranks of the disabled in our society.
Exactly the kind of issues that occupy the mind of Arthur Kaplan, director of Center for Bioethics, professor of medical ethics and health policy at the University of Pennsylvania. He also sits on the board of the National Center for Policy Research on Women and Families. Arthur Kaplan, thank you very much, and welcome back to On Point.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
There seems to be certainly a case to be made for the religious opinions or the religious beliefs of insurers to force someone to violate their own religious practices to provide a service for a woman or someone in their plan seems to be something we should take into account. There are, of course, other, and we've heard the other counterbalancing facts or other counterbalancing ideals. Where do you come down on this issue?
Well, I think the determination of what's in a health plan should be primarily left up to doctors and scientists in terms of determining what is safe and what works. Operating in the secular space, the determination of a benefits list, I don't think should be shaped by religious points of view. I mean, consider if a Jehovah's Witness-run company that prints their literature says we don't approve of blood transfusion and we're not covering it, I don't think people would be rising up in defense of a Jehovah's Witness religious exemption and their right to not cover a basic healthcare necessity. You could extend that into the realm of vaccines. You can extend it into the realm of certain products made from certain pig tissues and so on, like heart valves. In general, I think the determination of that benefits list, whether it's done by an insurance company, whether it's done by the federal government, whether it's done by state government, should be, if you will, scientifically driven, not trying to accommodate every particular religious value.
But there are some areas where there's general consensus that it's apt. For instance, a medical student can't be forced to perform an abortion as part of his or her training. That would seem to violate the religious beliefs of a medical student. And there's not too much objection to that, right?
Not too much. Although, again, conscience of whether you fill a prescription, conscience of whether you experiment on an animal as part of your medical education, conscience on whether you're going to learn anything about abortion, those are individual practitioner rights. Mm-hmm. But in setting up the sort of overall question of what's a benefit, what qualifies, we don't let the FDA take into account, for example, in its assessment of drugs and devices, what religion thinks about them. We ask that we get a kind of evidence-based list, and then it's up to the individual to make the moral choice to use it, or it's up to the individual provider to make the choice to give it or say that that's something they offer. But I think the trend toward infusing religion into the determination of what works or what's safe is not a good direction.
And Anna, you would say, you know, it's not a trend towards infusing religion, right? It's always been there, that you've made the point repeatedly that the status quo before the Obama healthcare allowed that the status quo was changed by the Obama healthcare law, essentially.
Yeah, and I actually just want to point out with this particular mandate that we've been talking about, that includes Ella, an abortion-inducing drug, that came through HHS recently. I just want to read a statement from Dr. Anthony Lasasso, who was on the Institute of Medicine panel, who dissented from their recommendation because he said, and I quote, "The committee process for evaluation of the evidence lacked transparency and was largely subject to the preferences of the committee's composition. Troublingly, the process tended to result in a mix of objective and subjective determinations filtered through a lens of advocacy," end quote. And I think that that dissent is really important to remember. And you look at the constitution of the Institute of Medicine panel, when we're talking about this was supposed to be an evidence-based, scientifically driven panel that's been criticized for being an advocacy panel. There were several Institute of Medicine panel members who had direct ties to Planned Parenthood, as well as other openly pro-abortion organizations. You look at the people that were invited to present to the committee. Again, it included Planned Parenthood, the Guttmacher Institute, several, you know, I went and to each Institute of Medicine meeting, and I spoke during the public comment section, reminding them that the, you know, not to include drugs and devices that would have life-ending mechanisms of action, that would be violate the conscience rights of many Americans. And I wasn't the only person there speaking, but you know, I know that other pro-life organizations were there as well, but we were never invited to speak. We asked to, you know, be invited to speak to present, you know, our side on this, and never was that considered. So when we're talking about whether or not things should be evidence-based and scientific, keep in mind that some of these mandates that are coming supposedly under the guise of evidence-based are very knowingly coming through a lens of advocacy.
And I just want to point out, as host of a new show, I think I have the responsibility to say that you've called Ella an abortion-inducing drug a couple times. That is your assertion. That is certainly not the consensus of the medical community. But let's go to the calls. Robert is calling from Newport, Rhode Island. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. As an employer of many women, I want to take this to an extreme. I'm going to play devil's advocate, but it's going to come out of my actual employer's experience of dealing with insurance claims that some of my employees have provided. If I am granted the right to refuse coverage for things that I feel are immoral, that I do not wish, that I feel my employees would be unethical to provide, then I would deny coverage for premature baby care. One of my employees, 46 years old, decided against her physician's wishes to have a Down syndrome child. The bills thus far, before the child even left the hospital, were close to $350,000. Now, I find that morally objectionable as an employer because the taxpayers are now being forced to fund something that somebody else should actually pay for. I have no objection to an individual having a Down syndrome child. That's fine, but you pay for it. You knew this was coming. Now you're going to expect somebody else to cover your bill. That is an unethical position in my mind, and if this bill is passed, then employers could do exactly what I just suggested they might do. Now, I am not saying I would do this.
Right.
I'm willing to play devil's advocate here because I see the bills. So when people start talking about what is ethical and what is unethical, my next issue is, well, sure, are you paying for it? No, you've made me pay for it.
Thanks for the quasi-hypothetical there, Robert. Anna, what in the bills would prevent an employer from doing that, from taking from enacting an act of conscience that you personally and many like you would deem immoral?
Well, that's assuming that you would somehow have an insurance plan where the employer is on a case-by-case basis making a determination that he's not going to pay for maternity coverage. What the bill would do would allow you to negotiate out of your insurance plan, you know, these drugs, devices, services, whatever it is, that violate your conscience. So you would be presuming then that an employer is going to negotiate out of his contract a very specific circumstance before it exists. So I think that, I mean, it's a very far-fetched hypothetical.
But wait a minute, it could. But you're saying under the bills, if this was, you know, Roberts or who's ever big issue in life, he could very well do that. There's nothing preventing him from doing that.
I don't think nothing would force the insurance provider to offer a plan that has that. So I don't think that hypothetical is going to work. And also, it wouldn't be, I mean, I'm not sure that situation would be covered because you're talking about denial of a service in a specific, more sounds like on the status of the patient than actually the objection to the service itself which would be maternity coverage and coverage for disabilities. So I don't think that would be covered, and I also think it's a hypothetical that doesn't fit the bill at all.
Art Kaplan?
I think it fits, and I think you're setting up trouble again when you let the employer dictate what that list of covered benefits are. If we get a cure someday for eye diseases or spinal cord injury that involves embryonic stem cells, we will be having this fight again because some people are going to say, I'm not paying for that. It violates my conscience given the way in which that particular cure was made. We've heard Rick Santorum already say, I'm not going to cover genetic testing, which is moving quickly based on blood tests, because it may lead to more abortion. I think that kind of prenatal genetic testing using blood tests, which is just starting, is going to become standard of care. Doctors are going to want to do it. to monitor the health of the fetus, to get parents ready to deal with whatever risk factors their kids may have. It may lead some people to terminate pregnancies, but it's going to turn into a huge, huge sticking point if we have this continued infusion of religious values or personal values. I said it before and I'll say it again. If you have a religion, Native American religion, or some group that doesn't believe in surgery, doesn't believe in blood transfusion, doesn't believe in vaccination, you're going to have a hodgepodge of all kinds of strange exemptions affecting people at work who have, you know, want to get the health care, want to get the benefit. I don't think this is the right approach. I think the right approach is to battle the ethics out in the minds of people and say, you shouldn't swallow that pill. You shouldn't get that genetic test. Here are the moral reasons. This fighting it out over coverage and mandates and so on is, I just think it's the wrong moral grounds to have the argument.
The people making the ethical choices should be the users or potential users of the medication or treatment, you're saying. And Art Kaplan, we just heard something really interesting in that Rick Santorum cut we played a while ago, because talking about not abortion, talking about contraception is one thing. It's clearly against the dictates of the church. But prenatal testing is not against the dictates of the church. But Santorum's objection is, what do you get prenatal testing for? Perhaps it could tell you that your child will have Down syndrome. Perhaps then you could make the choice to have an abortion instead of to have a child with Down syndrome. So, you know, I don't really know what to make of that. And it seems to be that this is, you know, a case where we're talking about, Anna has warned us over and over again that don't jump to the worst case scenario. But there's the possible front runner for the Republican nomination, you know, talking about eliminating a medical procedure that's not even literally against the dictates of a major religion.
Well, that's true. And I think he has worries that are partly based on fears about what will happen to the different and the disabled from genetic testing, and partly worries about an increase in abortion or termination of pregnancy the more genetic information gets out there. But I'm going to say it again. Ultimately, you are not going to win the battle of contraception. You're not going to win battles about abortion. You're not going to win battles about embryonic stem cell research by fighting these mandate wars. What we're going to have is a woman who can get a genetic test by the mail, get a pill sent to her from somewhere, and is going to make a decision ultimately about what she wants to do with that pregnancy. And those who are pro-life, those who worry about the disabled, are going to have to win the heart and mind of that woman. They're going to have to convince her of what they think is the right thing to do. And I don't think it's going to be something that's going to be resolved, settled, or helped to politicize this whole question of what's on the mandate list. It's not the battleground.
Let's take a call from Nancy, who's calling from Buffalo, New York. Hello, Nancy, and thank you for joining us.
Yes, hello, Mike. I just want to say I'm in tears, this whole program, and because I'm in my 70s, and when I was a teenager and I found out that in my state the Department of Social Services was not permitted to speak to a woman about birth control, and I started to wonder why. This makes no sense. Birth control is cheaper for the Department of Social Services and for the insurance companies. And I finally figured out it's because they want to control women. And we fought and we fought for rights. We fought for Roe v. Wade. We've been fighting that, and now it's starting all over. Now they're talking about trying to take away contraception. It's not about reason. It's not about religious tenets. It's not about morality. It's about because the men want to control the women. And I'm just very upset about it.
Well, and thank you for the call, Nancy. Anna Franzanello, beyond saying this, as you said before, this is not about taking away contraception. It's about employers and insurance having a right. What else would you say to Nancy?
Well, I mean, I guess I'd repeat that point, that nobody's talking about taking away contraception. Nothing in this bill would make it illegal. Nothing would make it it's not about taking away contraception. What it is doing is it's preserving the right of religious employers or employers generally to negotiate out of their negotiate the way that they have been doing in their insurance plans all along. So nothing is on the table for taking away contraception or even, you know, drugs and devices that you know may prevent implantation or affect implantation. That's not on the table So that's what I would say.
Anna, we've been talking about ideas and ideals. I want to ask you about the politics. Most experts say the Senate bill, actually, the amendment will not pass. The House bill might, but there's no chance that president, if it did, there's no chance it would become a law. So what's the end game? What good can you and those of your opinion get out of this discussion or these bills?
Well, I think it's important to have this discussion. I think it's important to show where who is blocking the Respect for Rights of Conscience Act from being enacted into law. So whether if it, you know, doesn't end up passing in the Senate, you know that, or if it passes both the Senate and the House, you know, with the co-sponsorship in the House, it's most likely to pass there. You know, it would actually force a veto from President Obama, showing that he's holding this up. So, but I think it's also good to have these discussions and actually get the truth out about what preserving the freedom of conscience means, instead of just having, you know, attacks from organizations like Planned Parenthood saying this is about taking away birth control, but actually showing no, this is about respecting, you know, First Amendment principle that has thus far been respected.
All right. I want to thank you, Anna Franzanello, Staff Counsel for Americans United for Life. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, Arthur Kaplan, Professor of Medical Ethics and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania.
Thank you very much.
And you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You could follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Mike Pesca in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.